Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas. It's Cofield & Company.
All right, here we go. Cofield & Company here on a Thursday. We're then back in our Finley Toyota studios. I'm on the road covering UNLV and Kansas tomorrow, right here in Kansas City. John Montoba is going to join us in just a bit at Stadium Swim. Just give me the thumbs up on that one. Interesting day today. I understand that social media gets people all crazy and then they can all go into the pit of misery and get all worked up over news that is incomplete, unfinished, not sourced. And as we start out today, calm down. And I understand it's big, big news around UNLV and what's going to happen with the Mountain West Conference and the new Pac-2 expanding. We'll lay it out for you in every hour with different guests. We'll give our takes. John Montoba is hanging at Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas. What's up, John? How are you, buddy?
I'm pretty good. It's been a hectic day personally, Steve, but it's nice to be relaxing for a little bit while I'm doing the show, you know? I love Stadium Swim.
Yes. Cabana 7 is the site, so if you're out at Stadium Swim, an hour later, go see John and Mateo at Cabana 7. Thursday Night Football is going to be on the 143-foot screen. It is a good game, right? A lot of Thursday night games we go in, John, and we're like, oh, boy, this is ugly. This game means a lot. It's on a short week. A lot of tumult around the Miami situation because of Tyreek Hill being Tyreek Hill. Not saying that he was 99% in the wrong, because the police officer who got more than frisky was in the wrong as well, but the whole thing originally was created by Tyreek Hill. So, hey, this is what the Dolphins signed up for. Will they be distracted tonight? I doubt it. It's a hell of a setup, and this is a good rivalry, and it's a rivalry that the Dolphins haven't always had the easiest time in.
Yeah, it's weird because I think you can make the argument, were they distracted in their win over the Jags last week? Because they look good, right? Like, they were on the verge of losing by a comfortable margin before a fumble into the end zone turned everything around, and then the aforementioned Tyreek Hill makes a big play for them, and they end up winning the game. But maybe they are going to be distracted. But this game, I think, is going to be very, very good. You have injuries on both sides that are going to be a problem. You have a Bills team that defensively has some real issues. On the back end, you just lost a corner. Your safeties were already a problem. You and I talked about that last week. Milano's been out. So I'm fascinated by a game that looks like on the surface could be fun, exciting, and high scoring, but with so many moving pieces both on the field and off the field, there's a ton going into it.
What have you heard in terms of money and sharps?
I haven't heard much. It seems like it's pretty balanced in terms of action. I mean, you can read the market. It'll tell you stuff, right? For example, we've been sitting at like 2.5 pretty much this entire time since this game got hung. There's some altered juice out there. Circa here is shaded to the favorite side at minus 120. So it looks like maybe they're going to be on the verge of going to 3. But I'm willing to bet that if those 3s pop up, they'll disappear relatively quickly. And I think that's why the market's where it's at right now.
It looks like a lot of overplay. 50.5. Some of the numbers I'm reading, cash 77% on the over, tickets 75% on the over. Where are you on the over?
And yet we're at 48, right? So, like you said, open 50.5, we're at 48. But yeah. Is that a little reverse line movement, I think is that's what they call it?
Yeah.
Look, with the injuries that you're talking about on the back end for Buffalo, I tend to think higher scoring. I think both teams are going to be able to get theirs. We're not talking about inclement weather or anything of that nature. So I tend to lean to the over for a game like this. I also think the world of Miami, right? Like, I bet them to win the AFC East, one seed, Tua to win MVP. I do think that they're very, very good. And I do think that there were some troubling aspects of this defense for Buffalo that popped up in the win over Arizona.
We also have a really important college football game in terms of group of five or group of six, or whatever we're going to call it now. I guess group of six in the future. But Texas State is playing tonight against Arizona State. And Texas, I mean, for both teams, it's a big game. It's a gigantic game. Anytime a group of five gets to play a power or whatever, I can't do this anymore with this nonsense. But you get my point. And Texas State walloped, what was it, UTSA last week. So they were one of about the seven teams from Group of Five where it's like, hey, maybe they can make the playoffs. So you hear my frustration on the labels now. I'm done. I'm kind of tired of, you know, the Power Four, Group of Six, Group of Five, whatever it is. What's the other term they use? I just read it again, and I will not let it sear into my memory. I'll look it up. It's so stupid. So what happens overnight and this morning, what's announced, because it's been in the works for a while, the way I look at this, John, right now, we find out this morning that San Diego State and Boise State, who have been trying to leave forever and are disloyal pukes, but you don't blame them. You know, if they think there's a better opportunity. I don't know if this opportunity is better. We're going to examine that. But Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and I just mentioned San Diego State, those four are going to join the Pac-2 leftovers, the schools that got left behind, who I kind of consider a group of five-type schools anyway, but they've got a war chest, and they still have the Pac-12 name. They might be able to finagle an auto bid. I think that's out the window, but they're trying to rebuild the Pac-12, use the Pac-12 brand, get to eight teams by 2026. They chose the first four. What do you think of the first four that they chose?
I mean, I don't think it's a surprise when you look at all four of them. I mean, consider, you already mentioned it, right? San Diego State, Boise State. We're already trying to make their way out of this process, like out of the conference
for a very long time. At one point, they were going to play in the Big East. San Diego's going to play, you know, hey, we got to match up with Providence tonight in basketball.
Yes. You know, both programs think of themselves as above the Mountain West. It's all of their actions say so. So not a surprise that they would do this. I think when you look at the other programs, people might be surprised by Colorado State and Fresno State. But for Colorado State, you and I have talked about it before. You've mentioned it many times. It's a well-funded program. It's got some money behind it. And it's not a surprise that they would be an attractive program, not only with where their location, but with where the financial support is for that program. And then Fresno State's a good program in California where you can use that market in Northern California. I don't think there's a big surprise by either four of those.
Okay. So right now UNLV fans are kind of looking around. UNLV fans are looking around thinking, like, wait. First of all, I think a lot have kind of – Rebel fans are weird, and especially on the basketball side. They've always kind of looked down their nose at the other schools, and yet UNLV in basketball has been okay but not where they've wanted to be since Lon Kruger.
Correct.
So there's always been this kind of poo-pooing of other schools. There's been looking up at schools like San Diego State in basketball and Boise in football going, we should be there. Why aren't we there? And these are uncertain times. And while I was kind of checking out what was going on, and there was a frustration building because there's no information out there, and the folks at UNLV, you know, continue to say the same thing. We're going to do the best thing for the school. We're going to look into our options. We'll have more information at some point in the future. Is that not enough? Like, was today a breaking point, and everyone needs to know what the hell is going on?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, what about this process has told you that nothing can develop late, that you can't be included? You know what I mean? What about this entire thing has told you that something is cemented in stone, that, hey, if you don't make it, you're done. Like, sorry. Like, no, that's not at all. In fact, to give UNLV fans and backers of the pride, I guess, some sort of hope, one of the reports is that maybe Cal and Stanford could come back.
Yeah.
So, like, if you think that this is done by any stretch or you've missed the boat, it's not the case. ESPN's write-up on their website. It's their headline story. You can read it. UNLV is explicitly mentioned as being a favorite to also be a part of this process. I would not be freaking out at all.
And so much of this, in terms of the process, I think is about money and that it's being done in stages. One, Gloria Navarro is the commissioner of the Mountain West. He's getting killed by some. I didn't realize until today when I saw the buyouts for the four schools to leave the Mountain West. And then there's a penalty on the other side with Washington State and Oregon State. I didn't realize that when they negotiated that football scheduling agreement, they actually put penalties like, hey, we're working with you, but you come and rob us, you're paying us. That is what a brilliant clause to put in. Not only – by a lot of accounts, Oregon State and Washington State probably paid too much money because they were really in a desperate position to get football opponents on really short notice. But then this clause is also in there. So, and they're in a position where they're kind of arrogant. They're like, we got like $250 million coming to us with all the extra money, residual stuff from the Pac-12. So we have the money. So I was kind of blown away by that. Like, this is going to be an expensive move if this holds. It is going to be a very expensive move for the four schools.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because it's almost somewhat like the buck passes now from the Pac-2 schools, right? You mentioned they had all that treasure trove of asset they were sitting on, and they're like, yeah, we'll spend it on getting these teams in. That's fine. So then all that money then goes to the Mountain West, and the Mountain West is sitting there now with all that potentially. And going, all right, cool, now what are we going to do with all of this money? But no, I thought it was very smart. It was one of the original things. Look, and you could say, I think a lot of people would look at that and go, it's somewhat underhanded to agree, because there was a report right before the season that talks had really stalled out on agreeing to another scheduling agreement for next season.
Right.
And that they had to reach a certain deadline.
Yep.
And that a lot of people were like, what's the Pac-2 doing? Like, this is nonsense. And I think you saw the writing on the wall, which is like, yeah, they're probably going to sit there and go, yeah, we can eat that. Yep. Look at the schools that they want. We can eat that.
While people around the Mountain West Conference certainly people not in the know, because anyone in the know at these schools, and they did a good job of not leaking it, at the time, people were like, well, Washington State and Oregon State are screwed. What do they do here? Can't believe this. They were working on this deal.
Yep.
And also there were no leaks from the Mountain West side, because I'm sure a lot of Mountain West people were like, yeah, there's a good chance that they're going to pluck a bunch of these schools. So as we sit here, the Pac-2 is a six-school conference. They need two more schools by 2026. I don't think if they're going to have a real conference, it's going to be just eight. So there could be more expansion beyond that. And then all of this money stuff is going to be heavily litigated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the story of the Big 12, which continues to sort of paw around all over the country for more members. So this is the first step. I don't know if it means the destruction of the Mountain West Conference. The Mountain West Conference is going to look very different if it even exists in 4 or 5 years. And I know people in Vegas don't want to hear, be patient, but the schools kind of asked you already to be patient with its main programs because it's needed a lot of time to get them close to turning the corner here. You're going to have to be a little more patient. And I will say this, we're going to examine this later on. When people throw out there, hey, is UNLV doing anything? Are they talking? Are they just sitting there with their thumbs up their keisters? They've been talking. They've been working on it. You know, fans can also do a part. If you look at the four schools that got chosen here, it's football-based.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the top five average attendance over the last, whatever, half dozen years, the schools that get the most fans are the schools they chose. And, John, I walked out onto the field at the Owl last week for the UNLV opener against Utah Tech, and you can say whatever you want to say about Utah Tech. There were 25,000 there. It's respectable. The fans can do their part, because most of what UNLV has to sell, and you even see fans buy into it, most of what UNLV is selling is, well, I mean, look at the potential.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always hook people by saying, look at the potential, when other people have the goods. And I know there's a lot of people out there, and I'll go into this more as well. Like, Fresno gets banged on. You know what Fresno fans do? They show up. They show up, and a bad crowd for them is 35 or 37,000. They show up. And when you're building a football conference, you need to see that schools are bringing in money. They've got crowds. Yes, they've got upside. I think market size matters. But it's all stuff we'll get into. Coming back, we're going to go the national route, break down a bunch of games. Michael Felder from Bleacher Report and Learfield will be in later on in the show. Dan Wolkin, USA Today, came out and hammered the four schools that left from the Mountain West Conference or are leaving, went after Washington State and Oregon State, and said, this is completely inconsequential, but we'll get it on the air in about 2 hours, and we'll break it down.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
Las Vegas Aces back on the floor on Friday, tomorrow. Another game against the Fever. Weird scheduling quirk. Let's give away 4 tickets for when they come back home. 4 tickets in the ESPN Fan Zone. Aces and Connecticut Sun. Sunday, 3 o'clock start at McUltra Arena. You can get your tickets at AXS.com. The Fan Zone is brought to you by Westar Credit Union and Finley Volkswagen Henderson. 4-pack for the Aces and Connecticut. 364-1100. Caller 7364-1100. So a lot of college football news out there, and plenty to get into in terms of games and storylines. Just a little while ago, I got a chance to catch up with Bleacher Report's Michael Felder, and we got right into the news today that 4 Mountain West Conference schools are jumping into a conference with Oregon State and Washington State. And I asked him, hey, what's the ultimate point here of this Pac-2 expansion and these teams jumping?
Well, I think the point is to try to stay alive and to kind of rejoin the idea of, instead of it being Power 4, get back to being Power 5. That's what their goal is. Their goal is to make sure that, like, we are formidable. We are of note. We have teams that are worthy. And so I think that's the point. Does it work? I don't know. So we're going to see. And it can't just be 6 teams.
Right.
You got to get more than 6, which means they're either going to have to steal teams from the Big 12, but you have to make that enticing, or you're going to have to get more teams from the Mountain West. And that's going to be the part that's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's a big legal battle on the way. There's lots of exit fees that have to be paid, and money has to get paid towards the Mountain West. I think the only way this works in anything significant for Washington State and Oregon State is if they can woo some of those Big 12 schools back. That would mean maybe going way back to the Mountain West Conference days at the beginning, BYU and Utah come back, but I don't know if they're going to come back for this.
And that's the big question. That's the biggest thing that we have to like think about. And we're going to listen, we have, what do we have, 2 years or a year and a half to deal with it. But the reality of it is the, like, yes, I under, like Boise, like, here's the thing, you know, what's crazy, COVID, if Boise State goes, if they, the only loss they have is to Oregon this year before they get into the playoff. Now they do become attractive. They get back to where they were, which is a very attractive team. I think TCU is interesting. I think that I think obviously TCU is interesting. I think that, and someone brought this up to me, Stanford and Cal, do they want to stop having to travel across the country? So there are some other factors here, but it's going to be really interesting to see how this shakes itself out.
Yeah, I also wonder if, especially Stanford, because I think they were part of the breakup of the Pac-12, if they can sort of suppress their snootiness and actually want to be with state universities, you know, the state system in California with Fresno State and San Diego State. And then here's the last thing. They can do whatever they want. If they don't get the rubber stamp from the bosses, and that's Greg Sankey and the powers that be in the Big Ten, does any of this work? Why? You give me the positives from a money standpoint, why Sankey and others would go, you know what, you're right. We need you as a power conference. You're back in. You're the fifth.
No, there's no, no. They, what the Big Ten and the SEC, their goal is to basically snuff out everybody. Like, that's their, I mean, am I wrong?
No, I think eventually they want to go to an exclusive club with, you know, 40, 50 or 60 schools. Maybe not even that big.
Yeah, maybe not even that big, but like the reality of it is like it's you know what it's like? It's like everyone wants to go to the club, right? You're in Vegas, so you know this. Everyone wants to go to the club. And you got to bring some hot ladies with you to get in. Otherwise, that's how you skip the line. You bring some and then you get in and then you got to make sure you got VIP.
Right.
And then if you don't have VIP, you're just standing around paying $13 for a Bud Light. And they're trying to snuff all those Bud Light drinkers out. And as a Bud Light drinker myself, I'm upset. But at the end of the day, the reality of it is, to me, is that the SEC and the Big Ten are trying to turn everything into the VIP.
Yeah.
And they don't want anybody else to be let in. They're looking at that bouncer like, absolutely not. No, 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 no. And so they're doing the same thing with Notre Dame. We talked about this last week a little bit. Like, they're doing the same thing with Notre Dame. Notre Dame loses to Northern Illinois, and they're like, well, good luck, buddy. You either join us, boost our money up, or stay where you are, independent. And listen, you're not Beyonce, so you're just going to be hanging out by yourself. And that's going to be the most interesting part of this. And obviously the Pac-12 is trying to find a way to recreate some sort of, like, there's no nostalgia here with the Pac-12. There's no, there's no camaraderie. This is just, it's literally watching, you know, tadpoles try to make sure they stay alive when the bass come out.
Michael Felder's with us from Learfield, from Bleacher Report. You can subscribe to his newsletter. It's felder.substack.com. He's got more about Notre Dame there. I want to get to Notre Dame in 3 minutes. The Friday slate is interesting. UNLV is at Kansas. Kansas lost to Illinois. UNLV, this would be a big win for them. They're going to have to go basically unbeaten to potentially get to the college football playoff. And then Arizona and K-State is a great game, and it's, you know, one of the first big tests for Arizona. Check that. Arizona with their new coach.
UNLV, Kansas, I think both of these teams are trying to figure out who they are. With Kansas, they're a team that I thought Kansas would be better than what we've seen so far. UNLV is way better than I thought they would be. So shout out to you, my man. They are doing way better. Like, they are let's go. Let's do it. And then you throw Arizona and Kansas State in the mix. Arizona is one of the most explosive teams in the country. K-State, again, they struggled last week. And that was a really rough football game. So both of these teams from the state of Kansas, I think they're both going to be in a dogfight, and it's not going to look good. And the reality for me, what is it, 7.5 for Kansas and 7 for K-State? Come on, man. Like, this is we're talking about a one-play game. One-play game for Arizona, for UNLV, and if you can get that done, then you can really set yourself up for success.
Boston College, for real, should it be a top 25 team? Should it get respect going into Mizzou?
No. Right. No. Yeah. Mizzou should take care of business between Cook and Burden. Like, they should take care of business. Listen, I had a BC guy call into my show, to Hand in the Dirt, and he was like, the number 20, what are they, 23, 24, 20, whatever it is, they're in the bottom 20s. He goes, look, we won't be there next week, but it's nice to at least know that you're better than Florida State right now. So I feel pretty good about it. I think Mizzou's going to get a win. I think Mizzou is maybe the most underrated. Not underrated is not the right word. I think Mizzou is the most under the radar team in the country.
Yeah, I think they're going to make waves, and they're going to be a player at the end of the season when it comes to this playoff system. Now, you kind of hinted at it earlier that the NIU loss for Notre Dame puts them in a rough position. Yeah. They're not in a rough enough position where if they run the table the rest of the way, they're going to make it, right?
I don't know.
What?
I don't know. I truly don't. Like, that means they beat USC, right?
Yep.
So they have to beat USC. Do you think this – watching what we've watched, do you think they're good enough to beat USC?
That they're going to beat USC or going to have to?
That they're good enough to beat USC.
Yes. I think it's way too early with any of these teams to judge it. And they got caught last week. I don't know what they were doing. They're looking ahead. They were riding the wave of energy from the A&M game. They had a bad game.
I just don't think they're good enough to beat USC. I don't think they're good enough to beat a couple other teams on their schedule. And so what we're looking at right now is a team. And here's the reality: no one wants them in, and that's what I wrote about, right? No one wants them in. If you're not going to join a conference, you're not going to be a part of this collective, if you're not going to be a part of this, then why should we give you the benefit of the doubt? The Big Ten. Okay, come join the Big Ten. No, we don't want to do that. We make our own money. I was talking to my dad about this, actually, which is really nice, because he and I talk about a lot. We talk about, like, being a parent and doing all this stuff, but we don't talk about football that much. But we talked about football for a little bit, and he was like, if you're Notre Dame, you want to stay independent because you get your own money. You cash your own checks. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not waiting at the end of the year the way Wake Forest or Clemson or the way that Mizzou, or they're waiting for this check that's going to come from somebody else and you get part of it. No, you just cash your own checks, which makes sense. But the counter to that is the Big Ten and the SEC are trying to, as we mentioned, squeeze it down. If you're not going to be with us, then you're against us. If you're against us, guess what? USC already joined us. UCLA joined us. Oregon joined us. Oklahoma, Texas, they already joined us. They joined the force. If you want to be on the outside, guess what? Go all the way outside. And I hope you got a parka because it's cold out there.
Last one with Michael Felder. It's off the top 25 board, but it is a really good game. It is Deion. They have great storylines. Last year got ugly before and after, and this is not an easy game for the Buffs, who really need to get momentum going in the right direction so that people aren't asking about freaking the Pep Band and Shedeur Song.
Did you watch that game?
I did, yeah.
Yes. Like, it's...
I know.
I don't know what to think about this team. No, that's wrong. I know what to think about them. They cannot run the football. They will not run the football. They don't play good defense. Tell me the number on this game.
I'll check it for you here in a second.
Yeah, check it for me, because the big thing for me is I don't think Deion's a good football coach.
It's 7.
7. 7 points at Buffs, Colorado
State. Buffs on the road, favorite at Colorado State, yep.
I don't trust Deion at all. Do you?
No. I think the
– We talked about it last week, right?
The approach of treating college football like free agency, that you can rebuild your offensive and defensive line every offseason.
Yeah.
Not the way it works. He needed to keep all the guys he had last year and convince them that, hey, you know what, you're going to compete and we're going to make you better, and then bring in a whole crew, and then you have, 8, 10, 12 guys competing on that line, and the defensive line needs even more. I mean, I saw – it's funny. I saw Warren Sapp on an old video talking about how just competitive it is for defensive line reps. Right. You got to get the job done, and then you watch them, and you're like, they don't have enough depth on the defensive line. So what are you guys talking about?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you said it. Like, you want guys to stay and compete, and instead – he's not even letting them stay and compete. He's shipping them off to bring new guys in who are just like, well, I walked in. I guess I'm the guy now. Guy got sacked, what, 6 times against Nebraska? They got a Patrick Mahomes impersonator at quarterback? Like, what are we doing?
Nebraska's getting better, but they're
yeah, I know.
They're striving to get 6 or 7 wins in the Big Ten.
It was a good joke, though. Come on.
Oh, no, it's great. There's no reason that Nebraska should be hunting them down that often. And I think you made the best point the last time we talked, or maybe 2 times back, that when you build an offensive line, people don't realize that the tandems along the line, you need to know each other. You need to know habits, left guard and left tackle and right guard and right tackle. And then the center of the guards, it's all a partnership. And when you're just rotating in new guys every year, you have no, there's no camaraderie. There's no chemistry. It's a mess.
Yeah. You don't have that cohesion that you need. And so for me, I don't mean to say I'm over it. I want Deion to succeed, but screw it. I'm over it. I'm done. I think Shadur's really good. I think Travis Hunter might be the best player in college football, but beyond that, I don't care.
It's felder.substack.com. I like that. I don't care. We care, but I get your point. It's frustrating to watch Deion, self-sabotage and not realize what he's doing.
Yeah.
Mike, I appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Always good, man. You take it easy.
You can watch all the college football games, including CSU and Colorado, at Circa Las Vegas. On Saturday, it's going to be a fight day at Stadium Swim. Circa Fight House is open at Stadium Swim. Canelo Fight plus UFC 306 at the Sphere will be there. 143-foot screen. You want more information on Fight House and future fight cards, but this weekend's a big one with Canelo and UFC 306, both on CircaLasVegas.com to get the info.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
So the big news today, at least this morning, was the Pac-12 poaching 4 schools from the Mountain West Conference: San Diego State, Colorado State, Fresno State, and Boise State. You see a little theme there. But a lot to be determined in terms of the money. Each of those schools is going to be paying upwards of at least $17 million, if not more. It looks like the total number between CSU, San Diego State, Fresno, and Boise, plus the Pac-2 penalties, they could owe the Mountain West Conference $111 million. Ross Dellinger from SI was saying Mountain West officials are expected, as is protocol and league agreements, to freeze conference revenue distribution of those programs, giving notice that they are exiting the conference. It's sort of how they treated San Diego State the last time around, John. Mm-hmm. Ross also says that money, that revenue that's supposed to go to them, would potentially be used in their exit fees. And I go back to a conversation. That's why I said nothing's done yet. And for everyone out there who's like, oh, this new Pac-12 sucks. Like, in Vegas, you might be in that conference. So I would pump the brakes a little bit, because you're going to look like an ass. In a couple of months, it's like, oh,
there's not people out here saying that, is there?
Oh, yeah. We love the Pac-12. Oh, there's of course, because the immediate thing is like, dude, those 4 schools are stupid. They made a lateral move. What's the positive there? Like, we want to be in the Big 12 instead. You might be in this new Pac-12. But I go back to the other thing to think about is I go back to a conversation we had with a guy named Bernie Wilson, AP San Diego. My whole point there on the state thing, right? These are institutions that are underneath an umbrella. And Bernie Wilson pointed out with San Diego State, there were people at San Diego State with all these different forays into trying to get the different conferences, and money's being paid out and lost on the front end. And he's like, there actually are people to answer to here. Mm-hmm. As a state university, like, wait, you have to go to a board and, like, how much are you spending to do this? And then I got to see what – because you – I think a lot of the commitments are being made, again, on projections. I'm sure Washington State and Oregon State and the Pac-2 people, the future Pac-12 people, are like, hey, here's the plan. Bang, 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 bang. Does that fly with, the folks who are controlling the state system in California with both Fresno State and San Diego State? So that's another hurdle, and that'll be interesting when they have whatever meetings or hearings on that.
Yeah, and by the way, the projection that these schools reportedly got was, for media rights at least, $10 million a year, which it was reported roughly double what they're getting at the Mountain West, which I don't think that's the case for Boise State.
That seems kind of low.
It does.
You're going to jump. You're going to spend that money to do it. Now, I'm sure they've been promised, hey, this could be what the expansion looks like. Here's the not two extra schools, but here's, you know, six more, and then regional stuff. And, hey, here's TV projections. So there's so much to be worked through here. And remember, the last couple times San Diego State and Boise State tried to go to different conferences, it wound up falling apart. And I'm not saying this is going to fall apart, but there's a lot to be decided. And there are a lot of people, as you mentioned, John, you know, there's stories out there, hey, there's going to be another wave. UNLV certainly could be considered. If they really mean that they want to be a Western Conference, then maybe they won't be teased by places like Tulane, which, again, I don't understand that one.
Yeah, those are the three schools that are named, by the way. It's Memphis, Tulane, and UNLV as the next wave.
I don't get the Memphis and Tulane part, but I'm not, you know, a conference head honcho. I don't talk to the TV people, but that's where we are right now. We'll have more reaction on it as we move into the 4 o'clock and the 5 o'clock hours. Giveaway time. Aviators in El Paso in town. LVA is back. Friday is fireworks night, two Fridays from now. Final homestand, first pitch at 7 o'clock. Fireworks going off, final homestand. AviatorsLV.com is where you can get the tickets. 364-1100, 364-1100. A couple of tickets right now. Caller 7, caller 7. Griffin's going to hook you up. On the way back, Xavier Pope will get into what's going on with Tyreek Hill. And then, you know, with the election on the way, people are going to be asked in the sports world what they think of what's going on. We got two very different answers from Caitlin Clark and Patrick Mahomes.
Lawyer and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
Lots more to get to with the Pac-2 expansion. Next hour, we'll examine maybe the politics that go into UNLV not being selected in the first wave. Is UNLV tied to Reno? I already see some UNLV fans who are like, I freaking hate Reno. We'll tell you about that in about 25 minutes. Xavier, what's up, buddy? You seeing all this conference stuff now? More moves. We got four schools that are joining up with Oregon State and Washington State trying to revive the Pac-12.
Yeah, Steve. I was just wondering about the Pac-12, the Pac-2, two-pack, whatever, before, now it's six-pack, that it's now the Mountain West pointing Spider-Man emoji fingers at each other.
Basically.
UNLV will probably wind up in the Pac-12. It's just the first. It doesn't matter when it happened. It's going to happen. And you're going to just see, you know, that's just what conference realignment is. You never know what's going to happen. And teams are moving around and kind of figuring out. It's been a dance that's pretty much been going on for the last 10 years, Steve. And it's all about ensuring you get as much power behind you to be able to get broadcast money to stay in existence and to be able to find different ways to be viable in the large college sports landscape.
Let's talk about the big story this week legally, and that was Tyreek Hill and his encounter with the Miami police. And Tyreek came out yesterday and I thought kind of extended an olive branch and took some blame upon himself. If you were his advisor, what would you have said to him before he went up there and spoke about, you know, hey, maybe I should have rolled down the window. Maybe I do need to be better. Maybe I do need to be more accountable.
I mean, that's admissible in court if you sue them, right? So I think that it was clear from Tyreek Hill, he's not a well-spoken person, to be straight up. The clear thing he ever said was, what if I wasn't Tyreek Hill? But if you saw him on CNN, he really didn't articulate himself very well. He didn't sound really very well-versed on how to even present himself on camera. And so I think just from that standpoint, it was cringy to watch from my standpoint. I just think that he should have had one of his advisors there, particularly if he was preserving his legal rights. And then we hear that the lawyers for the officer, one of the officers, offered to apology to him, and then he declined. And so, I just feel like there were some missteps for Tyreek Hill, and he also took away from the fact that there was a heinous act that many people were in support of him in terms of what they saw with the video. It doesn't matter the type of, you know, there are plenty of people who talk to officers every day who don't look black. They don't wind up with their knee in their back. Period.
Xavier, the whole thing about the window, can you walk us through that? Like, does he have to have his window down? Because I saw there was a lot of people complaining about that. Like, no, you got to keep the window down. It's unsafe.
Well, it's saying that because the Tree Hill's windows are tinted in the state of Florida, when you're being issued some sort of ticket, that you have to keep your windows down. I think that once again, this is in the history of dealing with the driving while black, very minor infractions, tail lights. They even changed the law in several states in regards to certain stops in relation to that, because it led to police interactions that were unfortunate for black people and brown people. And so these are uses and excuses and covers to be able to harass black people in communities all over America that other people just flat out don't have to face.
Xavier Pope is with us. What did you think of Mike McDaniel, a fellow black man, speaking on and behind Tyreek Hill?
I think that it depends on what Mike McDaniel even calls himself or thinks of himself as black. He walks in the world. I've tweeted this. He said he doesn't. I can't really relate to his experience because his world is primarily presenting as a white man. And so Mike McDaniel he's presented that to the world. That's how he moves. He feels more comfortable in that space. And so he spoke from that vantage point, which is something is a privilege, frankly. And that's been part of the history of this country. Different people who were African Americans. There was this one drop rule that if you had one drop of African blood in you, were to be considered black. And so that's been part of the culture for a very long time. But there are many people who have found the way they navigate through America's racism by fact they did present as white, and I think that Mike McDaniel spoke to that privilege.
Can we talk about Patrick Mahomes, who I feel like with this latest deal where he was making some comments on political views, he was asked a question. I feel like he is constantly put in a position by the jabronis around him, his wife, his dad, his brother, any of these positions that he doesn't want to be in. And I just wonder why they just can't cooperate and just be quiet. But I know you're not happy with what he actually said, right?
I'm not necessarily unhappy with what he said. I think that it's naive to think that when you take a position of telling people to vote, to register to vote, you're telling them to be civically engaged. But what are you telling them to be civically engaged about? Where do they go from there? How do they improve society from there? So what solutions are you offering? And I just feel like it's a way to kind of skirt the issue, and then you're tacitly agreeing to whatever happens in our society by saying, hey, just go out. You're not really helping and informing anyone. I'm not saying it's a cop-out, because I do believe that athletes have the right to have their political opinions and keep them quiet. You and I talked about this, Steve, that can you have a quiet political opinion, and do you have to be constantly asked about it? I mean, Brittany Mahomes has openly come out and says she's for Donald Trump. Donald Trump has said that he loves her over Taylor Swift. And so when you use some kind of language that says this was makes America great, it wasn't directly stating to his politics, but it was kind of, you can look behind it and say, oh, I kind of know what his politics are. But he does just want to impact his larger brand.
Is Steve being too nice to Mahomes? Like, aren't you, what's the idiom? You're only as good as the company you keep. Like, at some point, Mahomes is putting himself in this situation being around these people, right?
I think in terms of father and brother, I mean, you can't do anything about your family, right? I mean, there are plenty of people who've played in sports. I mean, who've been in politics even, considering different people like former President Obama's brother. I mean, that or Joe Biden's son, who admitted guilty to crimes involving his taxes. And so you can't hold people that in your life, that are your family, responsible and tie that to the person themselves. But when you are married, I think there's an assumption that you kind of share some of the same values. And I think that that's why Patrick Mahomes looked at it a little bit differently.
So on this show, we love and revere Taylor Swift. Who is now Taylor Swift's bestie? Is it Brittany Mahomes or is it Caitlin Clark?
Caitlin Clark did like Taylor Swift's post. So I like that, Steve. That was a great segue. Into it supporting Kamala Harris. And you saw, and I've said this plenty of times, that if Caitlin Clark took a political position, that the guys who never watched the WNBA until she came along, that you would see they would turn on her. And that's exactly what you saw happen, Steve. People harassing her online, and then how now she has to answer for it. But I think that her liking it, come on. I mean, that's her, quote-unquote, quietly expressing her political opinion, but now she's asked about it. And I think that she seemed exasperated by the question. She kind of had her face in her hands. She's like, yo, I can't catch a break. These people are for me one side and toxic one way. Then I'll put myself put out in this other way, and then look at them trying to attack me. So for this season, man, she's had to go through a lot in this rookie year.
What Do you want a little bit more from her in the answer, though? I mean, like you said, in today's day and age, a like is, like, we know we're going to see it. That is your account. We know what you're doing. Like, why not just say it? Like, yeah, like, I endorse her message. It's why I liked it. I felt like maybe, like, if you were going to like the picture and we were all going to see it, why not come out a little bit stronger with the message?
I don't think that people sometimes look at likes the same, and I think that people have not necessarily fully understand what certain social media use, unsurprisingly, in 2024 means. You see what happened to Shannon Sharpe, and, you know, he's an Instagram. And it records him having sex. He had to have someone come out and say that, that account was act turning, then he had to fess up and say it happened to him. So people, you'd be surprised. Even people that are in the public eye are still not necessarily 100% knowing how to use social media in a way that's either intentional or maybe just get caught in a different, caught in a crossfire of different conversations.
So I'm a little confused on this IG Live that was turned on accidentally. Was it at the beginning of the encounter? Was it at the end? What's going on here mistakenly?
Come
by the
on,
way, how do you start?
You
do you, by the way, how do you start IG Live mistakenly?
Come on. Adam, you here? Do you hear Steve right now? You know where did it start? You heard the, you saw the video. You know when it seemed to be at the end,
right?
But Michelle Beadle, hilarious, by the way, with a tweet saying it wasn't me. I absolutely screamed when I saw that tweet. Way to play into this story. Obviously, for those who don't know, Shannon Sharpe video IG Live gets goes on while he's having sex, and it just, he had to fess up. You know, it's, you know, his name was called. It sounded like him. It was, you know, minus the grunt. We never heard that. And now we have to picture Shannon Sharpe having sex in our brain, Steve, by the way.
Should he be suspended by ESPN?
No, he's not going to be suspended by ESPN. Like, I mean, that's just something that just happened. I think that it was a mistake. It wasn't something he was intending to do. You know, people start to compare that with Paul Pierce, who seemingly was performing. And when you had Shannon Sharpe, it's not even pointed at him. There was no nudity. There was just them in. I don't even know whether that even violated guidelines. I'm getting into the weeds here, but because of the way the sounds, you can interpret it various ways and not necessarily say it was sex per se. And it may violate that, maybe after the fact that he admitted that that's what it was, but it's a way to cut it and slice it where it's something that may not necessarily be something they could really suspend him for.
You know, man, between, like you said, me having a picture of Shannon Sharpe, who's built like a brick you-know-what house, and then freaking Lenny Kravitz, who's like 60-something, you know, looking like he's 31.
Come on, I don't
need any of this.
If you ever listen to his podcast, he's very explicit with some of the sexual conversations. Like, I've pictured it before. I'll just say that.
All right.
Well, you know what, though? He did say, though. He said he was embarrassed by what happened. And he goes on to say, well, I'm a man, you know, being a man. And he, you know, kind of, you know, hey, this is how I get down. He kind of bragged about it a little bit at the end. So I thought that was a little funny. But Lenny Kravitz, man, this guy's, what, 60 years old? Whatever he's taken, I want to take it. This guy's looked the same for the last 30 years, Steve. Me. What's going on?
EP, we love you. We'll see you, buddy. We're up against it. See you, buddy.
I love you. Love you guys.